Right, this is Pure Decking for Thursday, October the 25th, 1774. This is a show about stuff that interests me. I'm Warps, and tonight I have BSV. Hi, BSV!
Hello, everybody!
I'd play your music, but I honestly forgot to put it on the soundboard tonight. So, yeah. Anyways, so, fair warning. It's probably going to be a bit of a short show tonight. I have a sore throat, and I couldn't convince enough other people to come on the show to help make up for it. So
I'll tell the truth. I killed everybody else.
You're supposed to say that. You're supposed to say that in code, and you're not dumping bodies in the river. You're disposing of vacuum cleaners full of raspberry jelly. Come on. Now.
I tend to understand the code more than just saying it.
Yeah. That said, if you happen to be working in law enforcement, we recommend not going out to the junkyard after 4 p.m. tonight. We'd appreciate that. So, anyways, just a little bit of station news here. I'm going to be rebuilding the back end some this weekend, so the stream's probably going to be up and down a bit as we get stuff going. And we've got backups of everything, so we shouldn't be looking at too much oddness beyond this weekend. But hopefully the problems with the live streaming are going to go away, and I'm hoping to get some more flexibility on the scheduling. The system we tried to move to didn't work out quite as well as we'd planned, and even though I'm pretty sure I know what the problem is, I've got enough people asking me to go back to the old system, so we're just going to do that. In fact, I spent most of the evening working on the replacement broadcast box, so... You know how long it takes to figure out one bad floppy disk when it comes to figuring out a SATA driver? Like, no, nothing reports it as bad, but it's bad. Fuck. Yeah. You know, things you're not used to catching anymore because, I don't know about you, the last time I had to seriously use floppy disks was the 90s. So, yeah. Yeah. Anyways, but not going into that too much, just a fair warning, stream's going to be up and down, and we're looking at a short show tonight. Anyway, so just to kind of move on to our discussion here, I've got a story from ZDNet, which is interesting. Now, I've got the first chunk of it here, and I'm going to read it out, and then we can talk about it. While many people see securing the internet as a means to stopping cybercrime, former Vice President for Information Security and Cryptography at the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, ICANN, that would be the people who assigned IP address ranges. Whitfield Diffie, and that would be with Diffie of Diffie-Hellman fame, as in the, you know, like, god of crypto, right? He thinks internet crime might be a necessity. He said that the security problems we face today aren't necessarily due to the unsecure nature of the internet, drawing a parallel to its reliability. He pointed out that reliability on the internet wasn't created by designing it into its bottom layer, stating that if it were, the cost to implement such a network would be substantial. Instead, he said today's internet protocol is a cheap, unreliable way of communicating, and that when reliability is required, other protocols are introduced as needed. If you need reliability, you run something like TCP, and then you concentrate reliability where you need it. There's an analogy here with security, he said. I'm rather inclined to think that a completely secure network is not adequate to serve our needs, and that one of the reasons we don't, and that's one of the reasons we don't have one. We put our needs above some notion of security. Furthermore, Diffie said that by looking out at the broader socioeconomic picture, creating a completely secure internet could be a mistake. I'm inclined... Now, this is the part about the article that got my attention. I'm inclined to think that society needs crime, he said, explaining that in the event a crime takes place or offline, such as home robbery, it creates jobs for police, judges, lawyers, insurance companies, and insurance companies. There's thousands of dollars worth of business here where the crook only got $50. Now, that's called the broken window economics theory, by the way.
Yeah.
Clearly, crime has a much larger constituency than society would like to admit. I'm conjecturing, therefore, that the internet also needs crime. Diffie said that the internet would be a nicer place if people didn't spread malware, but that, as the real world does, to an extent, mirror the online world. Diffie's argument for an unsecure internet doesn't mean that security can't be provided. He pointed to the World War I era, which all radio transmissions were completely open, yet through cryptography it was possible to send private messages. He said that cryptography essentially frees whatever information you are trying to transmit from the medium that it is being sent via, whether that is a satellite, if online, or an unsecure network like the internet. However, cryptographic methods require keys to decipher the information. As such, Diffie said that the problem isn't in securing the network, it's securing the keys. So, his argument is you don't secure the network, you secure the data. And there's a certain logic to that, which I really like. But the other thing to keep in mind is he's saying society needs crime, which I don't know. What do you think, BSV?
I don't see us about having no crime, but whether or not society needs it seems a bit odd.
Well, I like the argument of the thief gets $50 and then there's thousands upon thousands of dollars spent on the system to manage the thief. Which that just sounds like a broken system. Yeah.
Whereas the $1,000 that could have been gone elsewhere, like developing a better internet.
And said you got to spend it on lawyers and judges and policemen, right? No, yeah. And I'm not saying that policemen are overpaid, far from it, because obviously we need them right now. But, yeah. You know.
But if we didn't have crime, that means policemen and all that could be doing other stuff.
Sure. See, and that's why I was pointing out, that's the broken window economic theory, is you go around breaking windows and look at all the work you're making for people. You could, you know, selling new windows, the people to install the windows, you know, services around the windows. So it's the same economic theory that if you go around smashing windows, you're helping the economy. Well, yes and no. Yeah, sure, you're helping the window industry, but are you helping the economy? I don't think you are. In fact, a lot of economists will tell you that you're not, because you're taking the choice of where to spend that money away from the consumer, because that's money they would have spent somewhere else, right?
Well, to help the nation's economy, I move we start aerial bombardment of all major cities. That'll make reconstruction really increase their market.
Well, actually, there's a logic to that as well. That's why Europe and Japan have as much better data infrastructures than we do today, because their systems all got blown up in World War II, whereas we've still got the original one we put in place. So there might be some logic to that. Oh, hell. But yeah, I mean, he's got an interesting point about adding the security layer only where you need it. And I mean, it's Diffie. So you kind of got to give the guy some creds on what he's talking about here. But I don't know. I don't like the idea of that's, you know, just the argument of, well, you need crime. I don't think we're ever going to get rid of it, at least not in the short term. But I mean, from a practical standpoint, we're always going to have it. But the argument that it's actually a requirement, I don't know.
Yeah.
I was hoping to have Suave and Sard on so they could really go at it on this one. But, you know, what are you going to do? So I'll just give them shit for not being on the show to discuss this awesome story we have here tonight. Anyways, let's move on here to current events. This first story is from Ars Technica. A web analytics company that tracked the browsing behavior of millions of U.S. consumers has agreed to settle federal charges that it collected credit card numbers, financial account information, and other sensitive data without proper notice. So they're just gathering all of your data. It's like, yeah, we're just going to clear some space on your hard drive and buy software we think you need. Boston, Massachusetts-based Compete, Inc. agreed to obtain end-users' consent before collecting future data on their browsing history, according to a release published on Monday by officials with the FTC. The company also agreed to delete or anonymize, because we know that works so well, the consumer data it already has collected, and to provide directions for removing tracking software installed on the computers of many people whose data was collected. So what happened here is this Compete Inc. was putting spyware on people's machines. This is like browser toolbars, right? And so they weren't just getting what websites you went to, but probably everything you were typing into forms, which of course would grab passwords, credit card numbers, bank accounts, all that great shit, right?
Lovely.
The agreement settles charges filed against Complete, accused company officials of failing to adequately describe two products used to collect data about end users' browsing habits. The Complete Toolbar, The Complete Toolbar was billed as a way for consumers to get instant access to information about websites they visited. A second software package known as the Consumer Input Panel, anything named Toolbar or Consumer, was billed as a way for consumers to win rewards while expressing opinions about products and services. In fact, Complete collected more than browsing behavior or addresses of web pages, FTC lawyers wrote in a civil complaint filed in the case. It collected extensive information about consumers' online activities and transmitted the information in clear, readable text to Complete servers. Oh, God. Oh. So not only were they collecting your passwords, they were sending it out in clear text. Thanks, guys.
See? Criminal activities doesn't increase net security. They won't use any.
The data collected included information about websites visited, all links followed, and the advertisements displayed to the computer. So we know you were looking at RedTube. We know what porn you look at. As long ago as January 2006, the company also captured credit card numbers, social security numbers, passwords, and other sensitive data because code designed to filter out that data didn't work properly. We had the code. It just didn't work.
Yes, we put this checkbox of do not filter instead of do filter.
Yeah, the little camera on the tray that was supposed to stop people from putting money into the slot, yeah, that totally wasn't working. After the flaws were publicly disclosed in January 2010, the company upgraded the filters to better screen out such information. The software has also been encrypting data in transit to prevent some. So they didn't quit, putting spyware crap on your machines. They just got better at it. Yeah. So... Just as a reminder here, if you have toolbars installed, Google toolbars included, I mean, any of these toolbars, they are not there to give you a quick little search box or extra information. They are there to run code on your machine, most likely collect what websites you go to and sell that to advertisers. Now, they say they're anonymizing it, but bullshit. Don't trust that. You are trusting Colonel Sanders in the chicken coop. I mean, come on.
But he makes such good chicken.
I'm not arguing as to the quality of the chicken produced. I'm arguing as the fact that who you're trusting to guard your chickens. So, yeah, I'm just... Look, don't run these. If you have toolbars installed in your machine, throw the machine out the window and get a new one.
Especially if it says, install this and... you'll get a chance to win fabulous prizes.
Yeah, anything like, where you can win rewards. The rewards are a fraction of the money they're making. They're doing it from something else. They're most likely selling you as a product to another company. That's how a lot of these things work. All of these toolbars, all of these ad programs, all of these affiliate programs, hell, your freaking frequent shopper's card at your grocery store. The way those things work is they collect the data on what you do, and then they resell it to companies. Now, certain shopper's cards will have restrictions on who they sell it to, and that's how much do you trust that grocery chain, right? But they're selling it to Frito-Lay. They're selling it to Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, M&M Mars, the other food manufacturers. And it's it's just a way of them to collect marketing information. Now, the shopper cards have been around for a long time, so lumping them in might not be fair. But that's essentially what they're doing, is they're collecting your data, they're giving you a benefit for it. Now, in the case of the shopper cards, it's usually the discounts on the prices. But in the case of the spyware programs, the benefit is some little stupid-ass toolbar taking up screen space, right? So it's not even a good benefit. I mean, if it's a decent benefit, you can argue risk-reward, right? But in these cases, it's like they put a search bar on your desktop and pop up notifications every 15 minutes to ask you to buy shit. So that's fun. Next one up, this one's important. Barnes & Noble, and this is actually from Barnes & Noble's website, Barnes & Noble has detected tampering with pen devices used in 63 of its stores. Upon detecting evidence of tampering, which was limited to one compromised pen pad in each of the affected stores, Barnes & Noble discontinued use of all pen pads in its nearly 700 stores nationwide. The company also notified federal law enforcement authorities and has been supporting a federal government investigation in the matter. Barnes & Noble has completed an internal investigation that involved the inspection and validation of every pen pad in every store. The tampering, which affected fewer than 1% of pen pads in Barnes & Noble stores, was a sophisticated criminal effort to steal credit card information, debit card information, pen numbers, you know, thumbprints, firstborn children, and anything else they can get from your credit card. I'm going to summarize it here a bit. Barnes & Noble says the customer database is secure. It's not their Nooks. It's not their online store. It's purely somebody who's putting shims in the pen pads. And, you know, of course, they're putting in their Barnes & Noble's doing everything possible. If you shopped at one of the stores, go change your credit card now. And it's not all Barnes & Noble's. If you don't know what Barnes & Noble is, they're a bookstore. They make the Nook. But let's see. So if you've ever shopped at a Barnes & Noble in any of the following states: California, Connecticut, Florida, Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, and Rhode Island, then you need to call your bank, like, right now. So, yeah. People were putting shit in the pen pads at Barnes & Noble's. Which is actually kind of an awesome way to sell credit cards, you know?
Yeah. Instead of putting it on the ATM, just put it where they shop the most.
And you're exactly right, BSV. That's what these are. These are the same thing as the ATM skimmers. They're just putting them in pin pads.
Yeah. I'm just surprised they actually realized what they were.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it looks like something the manufacturer put in. No, what's this spark fun thing? I don't know. I mean, let's see. Arduino. What does that mean? It's Italian, right? Actually, I haven't seen a credit card scammer that just flat out uses an Arduino in a while. So, anyways.
Yeah. So check your stuff.
Yeah, no shit. If you've been to Barnes & Noble in any of those states, check your stuff. And you should be watching your bank account anyways, because those skimmers go out all the time. Hell, I've got some family that got caught because they used Redbox, and somebody put one of those skimmers on one of those movie Redbox vending machines. So... Yeah. Yeah.
Always inspect scanners. Although inspecting the one at the cashier has probably won't go over well.
Well, if it's something like an ATM or a vending machine, yeah, just put your hand over the credit card reader and give it a little tug and see if something peels off of it. I mean, don't sit there and try to rip the machine apart, right? But generally,
otherwise, people
these things
start asking questions.
Yeah, people look at you funny when you give the ATM when you're sitting there. It's like, what are you doing? I'm trying to pull the ATM machine out of the wall. What do you think I'm doing? But yeah, in all seriousness, most skimmers are installed with double-sided tape. So, you know, sometimes they use the stronger mounting tape. But anyways, a good tug will usually pull a skimmer off or at least loosen it up so you can see there's a skimmer there. Mm. Look for the pinhole camera, too. The easiest way to find it is a lot of times the skimmers will have an overlay over the pins. Or they'll have a little pinhole camera installed somewhere. So if you see a little pinhole pointing at the pin pad, that's another good way to see there's a camera. Now, these pin devices were probably opened up by somebody wearing a uniform that matched the manufacturer. Polycom, I think, makes several of them. And I can't think of the other manufacturer. There's a couple of different manufacturers that make these. So I'm sure it's not hard to walk in and be like, yeah, hi, I work for, you know, whoever. Yeah. And we're doing routine service on these things and then open them up and they put something on the circuit board, right?
I still find it completely frightening how easily social engineering works.
Hey, the social engineering is easy. Most people are
That's what makes it frightening.
Yeah, well, I'm going to explain it. Most people are sitting there going about their day in you know, automaton mode, zombie mode. They're following the rules. They're going through their processes. They're asleep. I'm dead serious. You walk around. You look at this. Look at how many people are asleep. They're just kind of going through the motions because that's their zombie habit, especially in their job. You know, if they've got a really repetitive job, you know, once they get the muscle memory down, they're not conscious. They're not doing anything. They're probably sitting there in la la land while their job's going on. So, you know, as long as you kind of fit what they're expecting, they're not going to question it. It's when you stand out. It's like when, you know, when somebody walks in with the 12-foot mohawk and the face piercings and says, "Hi, I'm a business consultant." It's like, that doesn't make sense. You snap them out of that half asleep mode, right? But if you walk in and you've got, you know, the button-down shirt, the black tie, the coffee stain, and, you know, the laptop under your arm, and you say, "Hi, I'm here from IT. I'm to take a look at something." You fit right into that paradigm, right? You fit right into the world they're expecting, so they don't even question it. So, yeah, no, you show up, and you've got the uniform, and you've got the hard hat, and you've got the clipboard, and you're like, "Yeah, hi, we're from, you know, such and such company, and we're just servicing the pin pads. I'm just going to need to open this one up and check them. We had a report of problems," or, you know, how easy is it to make up a bullshit story to get somebody to let you to open up a pin pad and put something in it? So, anyways, this next story is from NBC News. It was actually all over the place, but, excuse me. Fuck.
Put the lung back in.
Excuse me. Damn it. That hurts. On a dark and stormy night, an employee of your local bookstore strolls into your home, starts tossing books you've purchased over the last few years into a box, and then, despite your protests, takes them away without saying a word. I love the alliteration in this story. Thankfully, that's not what happened to Lynn Jordan Nygaard. Well, not exactly. The Norwegian woman found herself on the wrong side of bureaucracy, but the outcome was much the same without the mud on the carpet. Amazon turned off her Kindle account, blocked all of her books, and then they wouldn't tell her why. It's like they just deleted her shit, right? And then wouldn't tell her anything. 2 weeks ago, my Kindle started showing stripes on the screen, so I contacted Amazon support, Nygaard told NBC News. Someone immediately found the Kindle in the system and told me they would replace it free of charge. They could only ship the replacement to UK because it was originally purchased there, and I told them I would find an address for them the next day. She lives in Norway, but she has a friend who lives in London. Nygaard was pleased with Amazon's prompt service, she told us, even though this was her second Kindle to fall victim to stripes on the e-paper screen. But when Nygaard attempted to log into her Amazon account the next day, her account was suspended, and with it, access to her library of 43 books. Now, I know people who have thousands of books on these things, so...
Yeah.
And essentially, the customer support couldn't help her. When she called them up, they couldn't tell her what was going on. And the only answer she got was, I got the direct quote here, "Per our conditions of use, which in state and part, Amazon.co.uk and its affiliates reserve the right to refuse service, terminate accounts, remove or edit content, or cancel orders at their sole discretion. Please know that any attempt to open a new account will meet the same action." Short version of the story, she got her Amazon account back and all of her stuff back, and they replaced her Kindle, but it wasn't until it got on the news. And they still won't tell her why her account was locked out.
So, why? Because despite the fact that they have that part written into how he's fun, but I just don't. So they just locked it off, and we aren't saying why.
Well, obviously they thought it was some part of some sort of fraud, right? But that's the thing, and that's the thing you got to watch out with these cloud services and these online accounts and these always online connected devices, is you're pretty much at the mercy of the service provider. If the service provider decides to delete your account, and won't tell you why, and there's nothing you can do about it, well, you know, it's basically a fuck you. It's like, yeah, we got your money, we don't care. Just now, Amazon doing it with their books sucks, right? But it's not gotten very much play. So let's sensationalize it a little bit. Let's say Steam started doing this for some reason or another, just started locking people out of their Steam accounts and blocking them access to their Steam libraries, because Steam works the same way. If they can't get online and check it, a lot of your games don't work. Now, I know you can flip it into offline mode and keep playing.
But that only lasts for like a month before it needs to be checked.
Right. So, you yeah. know, if that were to start happening, how would you react to it? Because I've got several hundred dollars worth of games in Steam. If they suddenly blocked my access to that, I mean, I would feel cheated out of a lot of money.
Yeah. Pretty much the only thing that see preventing that is just the massive uproar against Steam.
Well, I'm not
arise from it.
To my knowledge, Steam has not been doing that, obviously.
Oh yeah.
But I'm just picking them as a nice dramatic example, because most of your ebooks are not very expensive, right? But even so, she's paid money for them. You can't just say, oh no, if you're only buying a license and we've chosen to terminate that.
Yeah. That's the thing I hate about the whole license of, well, not license, but yeah. You don't actually own your stuff anymore.
Yep.
Heck, yeah, with the physical
book, they can't just say you've got to mail that back to us. You're not licensed to have that book anymore. But with e-stuff, they can, so.
Yeah. Well, one of the annoying things, oh, just to go back to your example, a lot of modern games, they don't really have, or the physical copy you buy, pretty much directs you to one of the digital download sites most of the time nowadays.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's a key. In fact, I believe the latest World of Warcraft expansion, it was the latest World of Warcraft expansion. They were selling it as cards in a store, and you just go punch the card number into the site, and that would unlock the download for you. They weren't even selling physical media. It was a card in a store. So, you know, it's just something to keep in mind. It's why open formats are nice. If you can pull stuff out of the DRM-protected formats and put them in something... You know, in the case of ebooks, you might look into, you know, exporting them out as PDFs or EPUBs or something else that's a little bit less, you know, remotely deletable, and just putting them somewhere so you've got them.
Yeah.
You know, devices like the Kindle, devices like apps on the iPad, it's really easy for the third party service, or not the third party, but the service providers to just kind of reach in and, you know, remove access to your stuff. In fact, it's funny that I picked this up. There was a story going around. Apparently, now this gets weird. There was a Justice League cartoon called Young Justice that's been coming out. And for whatever reason, DC decided that they didn't like a character they used in this episode of it that just came out. So the network agreed to re-edit the cartoon, so they reached into everybody's account who had bought it on Amazon or iTunes and removed access to it. Yeah. I mean, I don't think they were deleting files off anybody's machines, right? But they were just simply blocking access to the cloud versions of it until it gets re-released. Now, I'm supposing if you've already paid for it, you'll get it when it gets re-released after they edit out whatever the character was. I was only skimming it, so I found the bookstore, the one where they completely blocked some woman's access to her Kindle, even better, so I went with that one. But there's several examples of this floating around.
Yeah. Even with the Bleaker thing, that could just, they could probably just go in and completely swap it out instantaneous and, oh look, we didn't like that version of the old book. Like, I know there was a lot of the stuff, like some schools were trying to get Huckleberry Finn or that.
Yeah, changed. They're trying to edit out because of all the language that was used in Huckleberry Finn.
Oh, look, all your versions have just been rewritten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, oh geez, can you imagine some certain areas of the movie industry? I mean, how many times have they re-released Star Wars and Blade Runner? Could you imagine they just go in and delete your copies? Like, yeah, you got to buy it again.
One thing that's bad about the digital world nowadays is it makes rewriting history easy.
That's true. That is true. So, all right. Next story here. This
do you have anything happy after that? Less bleak.
If you sell surveillance equipment, this next one's from CNET. The United Nations is calling for more surveillance of internet users, saying it would help to protect and prosecute terrorists. A 148-page report released today is titled The Use of the Internet for Terrorist Purposes and warns that terrorists are using social networks and other sharing sites, including Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Dropbox, to spread propaganda.
So because people other than the governments isn't. Are doing it nowadays?
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, the government's totally not, right? Potential terrorists use advanced communication technology, often involving the internet, to reach a worldwide audience with relative anonymity and a low cost, said Yuri Fatodov, executive director of the UN Office on Drugs and Crime. The report, released at a conference in Vienna, convened by the UNODC, concludes that one of the major problems confronting all law enforcement agencies is the lack of an internationally agreed framework for retention of data held by ISPs. Europe, but not the US or other nations, has enacted a mandatory data retention law. And everybody watch Western Digital's and anybody else who makes hard drive storage
skyrocket. Stuff.
Watch their stocks skyrocket as these laws get passed, right? Because it takes a lot of space to record this stuff. That echoes the U.S. Department of Justice lobbying efforts aimed at convincing Congress to require internet service providers to keep track of their customers, in case police want to review those logs in the future. Privacy groups mounted a campaign earlier this year against the legislation, which has already been approved by a House committee. The report, however, indicates it would be desirable for certain websites, such as an instant messaging service and VoIP providers like Skype, to keep records of communication over the internet, such as chat room postings. And that goes beyond what's proposed by U.S. legislation, which targets only broadband and wireless providers would cover. Other excerpts from the UN report addresses open Wi-Fi networks, require registration for the use of Wi-Fi networks or cyber cafes. Requiring registration for the use of Wi-Fi networks or cyber cafes could provide important data for an important data source for this thing is written weird. An important data source for criminal investigations. There is some doubt about the utility of targeting such measures at internet cafes when other forms of public internet access, e.g., airports, libraries, and public Wi-Fi hotspots, offer criminals, including terrorists, the same access opportunities and are unregulated. Cell phone tracking. Location data is also important when used by law enforcement to exclude suspects from crime scenes and to verify alibis. Oh, no, your cell phone was at the crime scene, so you're guilty. It's like, no, I left it in somebody's backpack. I lost my phone, but no. terror video games. This is the one that really got my attention. Video footage of violent acts of terrorism or video games developed by terrorist organizations that simulate acts of terrorism and encourage other users to engage in roleplay by acting the part of a virtual terrorist. So they're going after Counter-Strike here.
Heck, not just Counter-Strike. Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
Oh, that game-based stuff.
Paying companies Mafia. For surveillance. It is therefore desirable that governments provide a clear legal basis for the organizations placed on private sector or obligations placed on private sector parties, including how the cost of providing such capabilities is to be met. So yeah, they want Skype. They want to by law demand any chat services keep records of everything you do for police. I mean they want it all. They want all kinds of records, and it's obvious that they're gonna make the private sector pay for this shit.
Lovely.
Yeah, and you won't be able to play Counter-Strike anymore.
All in the great cause of freedom.
Somebody needs to look that word up again and explain it to them.
Yeah. I'm just... Yeah. So...
Yeah.
Video game developers are going to be labeled as terrorists.
If you make a game where you play as a terrorist, yes. Or it can be construed as such. So, like I said, Counter-Strike, because what's one team called? Terrorists. And what do? They plant bombs, or they take hostages. So, yeah. This one's from Boeing. Sard actually sent me a Slashdot link for this story, but I just went ahead and got it straight from Boeing. Champ, or Counter Electronics High-Powered Advanced Missile Project, may be one day change modern warfare by defeating electronic targets with little or no collateral damage. On October 16th at 10:32 a.m. MST, a Boeing Phantom Works team, along with members from the U.S. Air Force Research Laboratory Directed Energy Directorate team, good lord the naming in these groups, and Raytheon K-Tech, suppliers of high-power microwave sources, huddled in a conference room at Hill Air Force Base and watched history-making tests unfold on a television monitor. Champ approached its first target and fired a burst of high-power microwaves at a two-story building built on the test range. Inside, rows of personal computers and electronic systems were turned on to gauge the effects of the powerful radio waves. Seconds later, the PC monitors went dark and cheers erupted from the conference room. Champ had successfully knocked out the computer and electrical systems in the target building. Even the television cameras set up to record the tests were knocked offline without collateral damage. The technology marked a new era in modern-day warfare, said Keith Coleman, Champ Program Manager for Boeing Phantom Works. In the near future, this technology may be used to render an enemy's electronic and data systems useless before the first troops or aircraft arrive. In all, seven targets... Go ahead.
We have directional EMPs.
Pretty much. In all, seven targets were hit using Champ's high-powered microwaves in the one-hour test that degraded and defeated the electronics inside the test buildings. James Dodd, Vice President for Advanced Boeing Military Aircraft, part of Phantom Works, said there was a real need for a weapon that could defeat a target and not cause harm to people and structures. We know this has some capabilities and some impact. We're trying to engage the customer to see if there's a way we can actually get this fielded and implemented sooner rather than later. Coleman, who led the Boeing test team in the historic test flight, says the team is currently analyzing the data and telemetry from the test and may consider it a big step into modern non-lethal warfare. Non-lethal warfare. Yeah. I've got problems with that phrase. Coleman said, today we turned science fiction into science fact. Yeah, you're right. They built a directional EMP using microwaves.
I'm all for that. I don't like the non-lethal warfare part. I just hope they make sure to test this on living object or people before.
Yeah, they didn't have anybody inside of it. But the thing I didn't get was it just knocking the computers out, or was it actually like destroying them? I would imagine since it's high-powered microwaves are burning them up, right?
Yeah, I'm thinking it pretty much superheats or fries the wiring or something.
Yeah, it just blows out the chips. So
definitely very interesting tech.
I mean, if anything made of metal is going to get hot in there, so it's going to...
Ooh, implants.
Ooh. Yeah, I hope you don't have a pacemaker. So that would suck, actually, a lot, but...
Although I probably would prefer that versus a bullet.
Well, if you think about it, this is kind of cool, because they fire off one of these Champ missiles at... Let's just say for fun they were going to invade Iran. Because that one's likely. They could fire off a couple of these Champ missiles at where they think all of the command and control centers are and knock out all of the...
Blind all the
military commanders, so it's down to the field commanders to make decisions. And when that's the case, it's really easy to take out armies. Because there's no communication, right?
Yep.
So...
Just one of its actual missile move, just a drone with a device on it.
The story specifically was talking about a missile, but it's probably a device that could be mounted on anything.
Because it's just the way it's said of... Because in my missiles go boom and are expended, so unless this device just shoots itself out...
And it falls to the ground, thud.
Yeah.
Yep. We rely on the fact that they can't use electronics anymore to for them not to be able to find it. I don't know. I think it's kind of neat. They can totally just knock out, you know, somebody's electronics in warfare now without having to kill everyone in the room, which...
Look, you're gonna launch missiles at us, but we kind of knocked out your controls.
Welcome to the Stone Age, jackasses! I mean, you know, but,
Ooh, banks.
Oh, yeah, no, the applications for this are crazy. Mount this on a truck and point it out in front of your troops. How much of the enemy's gear quits working? Like radios? I mean, yeah, there's all kinds of applications for this. So, and I'm all for anything that lets us turn more of our, you know, just go straight Stormtrooper and Evil Empire. So,
Evil Empires are fun as long as we are somewhere above the boot.
It's surprisingly effective at running things. The trains ran on time.
God. Let's move on before this
gets
even darker.
That's getting scary. Next story is up from Vice.com. And this is, again, one of the reasons I wanted to have Suave on the show tonight. The Thorium Dream is an alluring one, as any member of its devoted band of disciples will tell you. The jury is still out as to whether or not this beloved alternative brand of nuclear power is feasible. The thorium is more abundant and less radioactive than uranium. Its advocates argue that thorium plants are much safer than conventional nuke plants. The Deccan Times reports, over the next 5 years, India plans to start building a safe nuclear reactor that can be installed in the heart of New Delhi or Mumbai without posing a danger to people or the environment. At 300 megawatts, advanced heavy water reactor, whose construction will start in the 12th plan period, would be so safe that it can be erected in the heart of any city, said S.A. Barwarje, director, Nuclear Power Corporation of India, LTD. It's a limited.
It's a limited nuclear power company. Or corporation.
Oh, fuck. Construction on the actual... It's Limited Liability Corporation. That's what you want to see on your... It doesn't actually say that. It's an LTD. I just, you know, its first thought came in my mind. There is nuclear power.
Most of these names are just, they think it looks neat.
It's a limited liability, right? So, fuck. Yeah, it's safe. We'll put it in the heart of the city. Why not?
Everybody sign the waiver, right?
Yeah. Sign the waiver. Construction on the actual thermoreactors will commence in 2016. We're well into the first stage based on natural uranium fuel from both the domestic and imported sources, reads an update on the from the Department of Atomic Energy. It will be followed by a second stage comprising of fast reactors. It is proposed to set up a large power generation capacity based on fast reactors before getting to the third stage. Thorium in itself cannot produce electricity and has to be converted to uranium-233 in a nuclear reactor. A comprehensive Stage 3 nuclear reactor power program is therefore being implemented sequentially. However, in comments he made in July, the Atomic Energy Commissioner sounded less sanguine about the thorium prospects in the immediate future. We have to assess the thorium-powered reactor on various aspects in the long term before replicating similar models in bigger ways, he was quoted as saying in a report in the Times of India. Thorium is abundant in India and pretty much everywhere else, but there is a special concentration in the sands of Kerala. How do you say that? Kerala?
K-E-R-A.
Yeah, Kerala. I'm American. I'm sorry. The plant, which itself will largely be used as an experimental facility, will generate 65% of its power from the famed radioactive chemical element. DT notes that the first AHWR reactor with thorium for fuel will be used to test new technologies on safety as well as thorium fuel cycle. It will be India's first step to embrace thorium as a nuclear fuel of choice. Now, I'll be honest, I don't know that much about thorium reactors. I haven't followed it at all. The only thing I really know about them is that Suave thinks they are the shit.
Yeah.
So I was hoping to have him on to talk about this a little bit. I did go do some just super quick Googling since... they kind of make it out like there's some controversy about thorium because, like I said, I'd only heard about it from Suave, and Everything I've heard from him is, oh, it's beautiful, it's perfect, there's no reason we shouldn't be using it. So apparently thorium won't work on its own. You have to kind of kickstart it with some of the more traditional nuclear reaction elements. So, and there's arguments as to how efficient it is, if it's worth actually using, especially since you have to kickstart it. I didn't see much in the way of disagreement that the waste generated by a thorium reactor wouldn't be as radioactive as long. I mean, it'd still be radioactive for hundreds of years, but it wouldn't be as... It would be safe in a couple hundred years versus regular nuclear waste, which is not safe for, like, ever.
Yeah.
So...
Definitely all forward to actual new progress in nuclear reactors, since it's kind of been put on hold for quite a while.
Hey, if it works.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I just don't know. I know they were saying that it would be safe to put in a city. They're not actually built in the first place in a city, right?
No, they're building it out in the middle of the desert to test the damned thing, because they've got to build it as a regular nuke first and then try to convert it to thorium. But they're saying once they figure out how to do it in thorium, they can put it anywhere, which, in my mind, great, let's put it in space. So, you know, let's use it to build the Enterprise and be done with it. But I kind of hope so.
Nuclear-powered spacecraft.
What could possibly go wrong?
They have nuclear subs.
That's true, actually. Yeah, we've got an entire department of our military that has been handling mobile nuclear reactors for a long time, so... Yeah, I'm all for it. I want to see it in cars, actually. I'm not even kidding about that. The big problem with electric cars is the battery, right? So, if you can build a small nuclear reactor the size of a bowling ball or whatever, put it in the trunk, hey! You know, I mean...
I can drive my car until I die.
Pretty much. So, anyways, let's go ahead and move on to this.
Me love you long time.
So, in Digital Dojo tonight, I don't have anything terribly technical, but I have some stuff that's just fun. Flash Data has published a list of the most commonly used bad passwords. And they are. The number one bad password that's used is the word password. Number two is 123456. Number three, 123456789. Number four, ABC123. Number five, QWERTY. Yeah, QWERTY. If you don't understand why that's a common password, look at your keyboard. Number six, monkey. Number seven, let me in. One word. Number eight, dragon. Number nine, looks like six ones.
Yep.
Just 1111111. Number 10, baseball. Number 11, I love you. Number 12, trust no one. It's trust N-O, then the number one. That's a great password there. Number 13, 123456789. 14, the word sunshine. 15, the word master. 16, 123123. 17, welcome.
Apparently 18, that's new.
Yeah. 18, shadow. Yeah, they've got on here where they moved up and down the list from where they published it last year. I'm not bothering with that part. I'm just having fun with this list. Number 19, Ashley. The name Ashley. Number 20, football. Baseball is more popular than football, really. 21.
For password-wise.
Yeah, fast. Okay. 21, Jesus. I don't believe they're cursing, but they could be. 22, Michael. 23, Ninja. 24, Mustang. Huh?
Is that... For 23 ninja, is just all those spaces a mistake, or is that actually part of the password?
I think it's just a tab stop that got copied in when I was copying the list. 24 is Mustang, and 25 is password 1. FlashTop's top 25 list was compiled from files containing millions of stolen passwords posted online by hackers. The company advises consumers or businesses using any of the passwords on the list to change them immediately. In other no-shit news, the sky is blue.
Well, good thing for mine, I go up to 9. Crap.
If your password was on the list I just read out, change it now, or just jump off a cliff. Either one.
Or throw your computer off the cliff.
Yeah, there you go. Just throw the computer out, right, and go live in a cave.
They don't need to do that. They need to just get that one microwave device.
Yeah, have them fly the champ over your house and just be done with it, right? Let's see here. So the second part of Digital Dojo, since I was talking about passwords, I thought let's just go get some word lists, right? And I've got a couple of fun ones here. Word lists are handy to have. I mean, if you're trying to, blind scan a namespace or you're just trying to brute force a login. So a lot of times what will happen is, especially if you're trying to like map DNS space, you'll find a server on a network and you might not recognize the naming scheme, right? It'll be called something like, the example I put in the notes here, it'll be called something like Magic Missile, and maybe you'll find another one called Wall of Fire. And if you have no clue that those are D&D magic spells, you're just going to be like, what the hell, right? But if you go to this wiki I found called namingschemes.com, they have all this stuff indexed and searchable in a wiki. So if you're using Simpsons characters as your naming scheme, they have a Simpsons characters list. So what you do is, once you figure out the naming scheme by doing a couple of quick searches in the wiki to find what pages, your server names are coming from. So if they're using D&D spells as their server names, you just copy the list into whatever brute forcing tool you're using, and then boom, you can identify all their servers because you know their naming scheme, right? So I just thought this was kind of badass, namingschemes.com. It's this huge wiki of all these different lists of naming schemes. So, one, if you're stumped for naming what to name your systems, I suppose you can use this too, but so can anybody else. So if somebody else starts figuring out your system's names, they can see the list you were using. So D&D spells might not have been the best example. So if you're using Simpsons characters' names, they've got a list of all the Simpsons characters on there. So
I just want to see a massive cluster of computers all named after different spells.
It's on that site, man. I mean, it's on there. So I'm sure somebody's doing it out there. I'm sure there's enough D&D nerds who are also sysadmins. I mean, hell, I think you'd think that'd be a good idea. What's your firewall named? Wall of Fire? I mean, duh. I mean, so it'd be easy to remember it, too, if you knew the spells. Now, another fun wiki I found, Skull Security has a very large index of password lists, and several of them look like they're from the same disclosures that they were using to generate the list of passwords up above Splashdata was using. So if you need a good password list or a good dictionary for whatever use, Skull Security's wiki is a nice place to start, and of course I've got that linked in the show notes.
Just don't use this list to actually come up with passwords.
Yeah, no, if your passwords are on this list, you need to change it. So I didn't even really want to get into detailed use of dictionary files and password lists. So I just kind of thought I'd list out some of the uses for them. The big ones are brooding and system scanning. The other big thing that comes to mind when I'm thinking word lists is using them to generate rainbow tables. Like if you're going to try to figure out all the MD5 hashes that go, because maybe you pulled down a database and they've hashed all the passwords. So, if you know their salt and you know how they're hashing their passwords, you run your password list through it, then you just do comparisons to reverse the hashes back into passwords, right? So you look for collisions. And again, these password lists are a nice way to do that. And like BSV mentioned a second ago, maybe you should, check your password, make sure your password's not on these lists. But if you're going to do that one, pull the list down and check it locally. Don't punch your password into Google and see if it comes up. Just a thought. I can see the thought process there. It's like, I better check and make sure nobody's got my password. I'll punch it into Google and see if it comes up. Well, guess what you've just done? It's it's sort of like those websites that come out whenever you see a big compromise. So punch in your credit card number and see if it was on the list. It's like, well, it is now.
What goes into the internet stays in the internet.
So that's really all I've got for tonight. So anyways, listen to the stream. We're going to be working on it a ton this weekend. Hopefully we'll get the system back up and going. We'll be looking for new music to add. Of course, Pure Decking every Thursday. Shoot the Noise on Wednesdays. NR7. BSV, when are we doing NR7?
Hopefully next week, as long as there's no surprise presidential debate going on at the same time again.
Yeah, you've kind of gotten shot down by the debates every, you know, past couple of weeks, haven't you?
Yeah.
It's like you're trying to get everybody together to do the show.
Oh, wait.
You're trying to get everybody's watching the show, and we're all like politics.
I think it's a conspiracy against NR7. This will not stand.
Careful, people. He sounds serious. Oh, hell. Okay. So, obviously, you know, listen to the shows, listen to the stream. Hit up the Galaxy 15 Radio site. Hit the Twitter handle, G15 Radio, you know, at G15 Radio. We've got the site linked into the Twitter handle, so whenever we post update to the sites, it goes out on Twitter. It's an easy way to keep up. So, of course, you just use the feedback form, use the shout box. We like feedback. BSV, unless you've got anything else, I'm going to hit play on this music here.
I don't have anything.
All right. So, I must have it too quiet. It's not coming through yet.
I'm starting to hear something.
Made it through the show with only one coughing fit.